Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. Today we are in lesson 381. In the last lesson, we covered the warnings that Moses was giving to Israel against idolatry, and we described also a form of it that Jeremiah the prophet was recording, which is similar to what the Christmas tree is all about. Obviously, in the old days, when Jeremiah was describing it, he was speaking in specific about the idols. That's the way they made them, either from stone or from wood, and obviously from wood, it's easier, anybody can do it. And they were decorating it, just as later on, once they stopped worshipping idols, and they came into so-called Christianity, you know, the faith, that brought the customs with them, the pagan customs with them, and they continued to worship Christ, at least with that. They couldn't obviously make statutes anymore, or idols, and so the tree remained within the body of believers, quote-unquote believers, that now became known as Christians, with the pagan doctrines included. And so that was one of the things that we discussed last time, and also we continued to chapter 13 and verse 5, where God is beginning to warn them against false prophets. Now, I thought that this point would be a good time to introduce a subject here, and we can go through it briefly. I'll give you a little background. Since we talked about the Christmas tree, well, people are obviously every year around Christmas time, December 25th, they celebrate supposedly the birth of Jesus Christ. And I think it is a good time at this point to discuss that before we continue with the law and the false prophets, because that was a part of the false prophets' teachings, that Christ was born on December 25th. And there are some other people that for quite a while, in the last few decades, have believed that it was not December 25th, but that it was around September, in other words, during the fall holidays. And the reality is that the Bible sometimes is a little bit different than what everybody thinks, and so we thought that it would be a good idea to go through it now. And what we're going to do is basically cover a few scriptures about it, and obviously, ultimately speaking, nobody really knows exactly what day Jesus Christ was born, but at least the biblical narrative gives us a clue to as close as possible to that time, and this is what we're going to have at this point. I think this lesson will be dedicated to that. Whatever is left, we're going to continue with the law. And so, basically, let's begin with chapter 1 of the book of Luke, where we read in verse 5, there was in the days of Herod, the king of Judea, a certain priest named Zacharias, or Zachariah, like the prophet Zachariah, God shall remember, that's the meaning of the name, of the division of Abijah, or Abijah, and that's an important clue, Abijah. And when you go to 1 Chronicles, chapter 24 and verse 10, you read about the courses in the vicinity of those scriptures, but in specific in verse 10 talks about the course of Abijah or Abijah. Abijah is really the correct one. Abijah is not the right. Avi means father and Yah means God. You know, God is my father. Obviously, the name of God is Yah, not Jah. But this is basically the case. He was from that course. David, if you read through that chapter, divided the priesthood in order to serve in the temple. Obviously, his temple was not built in his day, but he was preparing everything by inspiration from God directly in every detail, so that when Solomon built his house, he would hit the ground running with everything prepared and ready. And God didn't leave it up to men to do that. He himself inspired David in every detail how to conduct the services in the temple. And so he divided the priesthood into 24 courses, and there were two sons of Aaron, Eleazar and Itamar. The other two died because of their sin. And so Eleazar was more prolific. He had 16 courses, and Abijah, that is not Abijah, and Itamar had 8. So together there were 24. And Abijah was, the course of Abijah was the 8th, in that number of 24, whether he was from Eliezer, you know, the first 16 of Eliezer, and after that Itamar, we don't know. All we know that he was the eighth, in that number of courses, and they were to serve, you know, 24 courses. You have 12 months, you divide it, and you have 6 months, you know, two courses at a time. I have to go to the Mishnah and the Talmud to get the details, but basically they're all described there, you know, and how long they served. And some people thought that they were, you know, they would serve only once a year, but actually, from some sources that we can read, we find out that they actually serve twice, in other words, every 6 months. But in either case, on the holidays, be it the spring holidays, you know, the Passover time, and on the fall holidays, which would be basically, you know, the totality of the Feast of Trumpets and then Atonement, but in specific the Days of Tabernacles, when the entirety of the nation came to Jerusalem, you see, at that time all the Levites, all the courses were supposed to be present in Jerusalem to serve, since the whole nation showed up. Obviously they needed everybody. So in either case, the course of Avaya, that means Zechariah in this case in particular, was in Jerusalem in the temple serving both times. You see, besides, you know, whenever their time comes to serve in the temple in terms of their rotation, the yearly rotation of the 6 months. And so all the courses were there, and so Zechariah was there, obviously, in the springtime and also in the fall. And at that point that we read about the birth of his son, John, this is what this account is all about. In verse 23 we read, of the book of Luke, obviously in between you read the promise that God is giving to John through the angel, that he's going to have a son, and this son is going to be a forerunner for the coming of Christ to warn the people of Israel, to prepare the way and to bring the people to God. And so in verse 23 of chapter Luke, that is of chapter 1 of the book of Luke, we read, now after those days, his wife Elizabeth, that's when he came back, because he stayed there and he served in the temple, and then several days after that he went back home and his wife got pregnant. And so in verse 23 we read, so it was as soon as the days of his service were completed that he departed to his own house, and, you know, which was a matter of a few days, maybe a week, maybe two at the most. Now after those days his wife Elizabeth conceived, and she hid herself 5 months, saying, thus the Lord has dealt with me in the days when he looked on me to take away my reproach among people. So we find her at this point that she, you know, as soon as she's pregnant, she goes into hiding, and 6 months later, we read in verse 26, now in the 6th month, the angel Gabriel was sent by God to a city of Galilee named Nazareth. What that tells us is that Jesus Christ was born basically 6 months after John the Baptist. And so the question is, if this was the fall holidays, that Zechariah had that vision from the angel, then his son was born in Passover, that is Passover time. But if he came there at Passover time, and this is where the angel appeared to him, then obviously his son would be born in the fall time. In other words, after, obviously Jesus Christ would be born 6 months later, which would make it fall time, you know, the fall season. In other words, the holidays of mainly the Feast of Tabernacles. And this is what some people theorize. Well, if he's where, this is where he was born, in other words, Jesus Christ being 6 months later, obviously, it would be around the fall season. And so, obviously, we want to know what the Bible says about it, not, you know, what the theories of men are all about. You know, they may or may not be correct, but the final authority would basically be the biblical record. And we have a biblical record, which unfortunately not everybody pays attention to as closely as they should. And so in the process we miss some facts there. And so this is what we read here. In the 6th month, the angel Gabriel was sent by God to the city of Galilee named Nazareth, to a virgin betrothed to a man whose name was Joseph, of the house of David. The virgin's name was Mary. Well, in essence, what we need to know here, that 6 months after the conception of John, that's when Jesus Christ was going to be conceived, which means he's going to be born 6 months later. And then we read in verse 56, as we continue the story, and Mary remained with her about 3 months. In other words, in the 6th month of the pregnancy of Elizabeth, that's when Mary conceived, and she went and stayed with Elizabeth, her cousin, and she remained there for 3 months and returned to her house. Well, yes, question, why did she remain there 3 months and not 2 months? Well, obviously, 3 months later, John was born. You see, that was the main reason for it. And when John was born, and you know, she went back to her home. But this time, Mary now was 3 months pregnant. And so she went home at this time. And so if John, at this point, 3 months later, is born, let's say, at the fall holidays, which will be around September, October, then obviously later on, 6 months more after that, that's when Jesus Christ is born, which would make it around Passover. And if it's the other way around, you see, then John is the one that is born in springtime, in other words, Passover, and Jesus Christ in the fall season. And that's basically what the theory goes among many people. And obviously, the overwhelming majority still believe that he was born Christmas, December 25th. And so, we continue the story here, because we want to know what the Bible tells us about it, not what man thinks about it. And we continue here with the account of John. Well, actually, let's continue with Luke, because now we arrive at the time that Jesus Christ began his ministry. And obviously, that's going to give us a clue also to the time of his birth. And so we read in chapter 3, verses 21 to 23, when all the people were baptized, that is by John, it came to pass that Jesus also was baptized. Now, mind you, in Israel, and for that matter, any other place, where, you know, the season is the same. Winter time, you see, in other words, December 25th, that's not the time when you go to get baptized. Water is pretty cold, you see. And, it rains and it's cold and stuff like that. That would not be a good time to go out. And also, the baptism of Jesus Christ symbolizes something very special for the people that are going to follow him and for the plan of God that he has. In other words, it has to do with life, you see. December 25th of December is called the dead of winter. That's not where life is. That's not where everything is blooming, you see. And so life is very important as a concept here to remember that. So that should give you a clue that the baptism here was not happening in winter, but was happening in springtime at least, or summer. And so this is what we read here. When all the people were baptized, it came to pass that Jesus also was baptized. And another point also we can add here, the Jordan generally in winter time when the rainy season was on, and when it rains in Israel, you know, it pours, just like in Southern California, was basically swelling and, you know, a little bit more difficult to get into the Jordan at that time. So obviously you have to wait until things are quiet. Just another point there. But in either case, people were baptized, many people were coming from all directions, and you know, when it's rainy, that's not the time when you travel and go and walk. So obviously, again, that's another clue that it was a time when it was not the rainy season. It was nice and pleasant, and people could walk and come out of Jerusalem and walk several miles to the Jordan River, you see. Now all these things are clues to the timing of the birth, and obviously we know the death of Jesus Christ, that's very plain, and also the time when he began his ministry. And so this is what we read here. When all the people were baptized, it came to pass that Jesus also was baptized, and while he was, while he prayed, so as he was baptized, he also prayed, the heaven was opened. And the Holy Spirit descended in the bodily form like a dove upon him, and a voice came from heaven which said, "You are my beloved Son, and in you I am well pleased." So the Father is now speaking as he was praying to him. And that's the beginning, in essence, of the ministry of Jesus Christ. And so this is what we read in verse 26, right after that. Now Jesus himself, that's at this point when he was baptized, began his ministry. You know, this is where he began the work. And how old was he at this time? It says at about 30 years of age. So, if he began at age 30, he was born 30 years earlier, around the same time, the same period, the same month. You see? I didn't say exactly he was 30. It says he began to be about 30, so whatever the exact date here, still nobody knows. But we know here that at this point, when he was baptized, and remember all the clues about the timing of the baptism, and the fact that all the people were coming to John in winter time and rainy season when things are pouring and wind and all that, that's not when people go out to get baptized. You see? So again, it brings you to an age that is an era, a time, a period in the year where things are calm and quiet and pleasant and people can walk out and there are no muddy roads. You see where people get stuck? And that gives you an idea. In other words, Christmas obviously is not a good time for it. So it couldn't be at Christmas time, but we need to know more about it. So far we have many clues already, and we know roughly, you see, because of clues, that he could not have been born in winter time, because he was baptized when he was 30 years old. You see, he began to be 30, and therefore he was born 30 years earlier, and the time that he was baptized, things were nice out there. You see? So I have to consider all these matters, which are important. And now we go to the book of John that gives us more details and clues. You see? Still, none of them gives us the exact date. Nobody knows. At least it was not recorded, and God did not choose to record the exact time when he was born. But he gives us an awful lot of clues to make it possible for us to understand at least when he was born. And obviously, since we know when he died, that's going to give us another very powerful clue also. And so now let's go to the book of John, where we're going to read about the ministry of John and the baptism of Jesus Christ and the time when he began his ministry, you see. And also, at the same time, we know when he died. So that was not even a point. That's already established. Everybody knows that. Passover time, springtime again, you see. And so now let's go to the book of John, where we read in chapter 1 and verse 28, where John is speaking about Jesus Christ as he came to him to be baptized. And then we read in verse 28, "These things were done in Beth Avara, beyond the Jordan, where John was baptizing." And prior to that, we read about the fact that when he began to baptize here, people were coming from all over the place, and they were asking him, "Who are you?" And the Pharisees were coming from Jerusalem, and people were coming from Galilee, from Judea. In other words, from all over the country, they were traveling to that point in the Jordan River. And again, winter time is not the time when you do it. You see? That's rainy season. Everybody's inside. You see? So that would be a wrong time to do it. And obviously, when you put all these clues together by themselves, I already would tell you that it was not December. No way it could be at that time. And the question for us is, for those who believe that it is September, is it September or is it another time? And so this is what we read here in verse 28. "These things were done in Beth Avara." Beth Avara means, the house of over, a house over the Jordan. And so that's what Beth Avara. Beth means house, and Avara is over. And so Beth Avara, beyond the Jordan, the house over the Jordan, where John was baptizing. And now notice, as we continue, the exact wording that God had recorded, through the Apostle John. And John is, he's in essence at the end of the century writing, and he's correcting also certain misconceptions that were here and there. Well, in this case, he doesn't need to correct it. He just tells us. He gives us more details. But one of the misconceptions he corrected is a major one that was in the church, where they all thought that Christ was coming in his day, and he made it very plain later on. No, that's not the time where Christ was coming. They just thought that this is what Christ said, since John was going to continue to be with him. And that's what he told Peter. "If I want this disciple to continue to be with me until I come, it's none of your business." And so everybody thought, that means that this disciple, speaking about John, is going to be alive until the days of Jesus Christ, second coming. And that confused many. But anyway, in this case, John does not need to make a correction. He's just amplifying, magnifying certain details. In this case, very important details about the basic timing of the birth of Christ and the beginning of his ministry that we already read in the book of Luke. It was about 30. And so he's going to sort of more or less pinpoint the time of his baptism, which will give us an idea when he was born. Since he was 30, obviously 30 years earlier, at the same time, this is the time when he was born. And so we read again verse 28 that those things, in other words, the conversation before that, where people came to Jesus Christ, that is to John, and asked him about Christ and asked him about himself. And he replied to them and he says, all these things happened in Beth Avaran. That was the place where he was baptizing at the time. Verse 29. The next day, John saw Jesus coming toward him and said, behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. And it is at that point that Jesus Christ was going to be baptized by him. This is he of whom I said, after me comes a man who is preferred before me, for he was before me. I did not know him, but that he should be revealed to Israel. Therefore I came baptizing with water. You see? Now this was a time where people were coming from all over the place. You see? And it is this time, at this time, where people are coming from everywhere, which was a pleasant time to travel. You see? And winter is not a pleasant time to travel. Rainy season is not a pleasant time to travel. And obviously that was not the time when this was happening. And this is what he said about him. And that happened the next day after he talked to all these people that were coming to him. And so, remember this clue, the next day. So, let's call it day one. And then we continue and we read in verse, let's see, we go to verse 28, 29, we read about day one. And then we go to verse 35. The story continues, because in between we read about the baptism of Jesus Christ and the fact that the Holy Spirit came upon him. And then verse 34, John is saying, and I have seen and testified that this is the Son of God. Again, verse 35, we read, the next day. So the first day, that's when Christ came to him. That is the first day, the next day after, you know, the Pharisees came to him and asking him about Jesus Christ and his own identity. You see, the next day, that's the first clue there about timing, Jesus Christ came to him and was baptized. Again, verse 35 we read, the next day, John stood with his two disciples and looking at Jesus as he walked, he said, so Jesus, after he was baptized, the next day was still around there. He said, behold, the Lamb of God. And the two disciples heard him speak, and they followed Jesus. So this is, we read here again, the next day. You see? So first we read about the next day, and here again, the next day. So that's the second day, day two. You see? And then we continue the story, because in between we read about the disciples that followed Christ, Peter and then Andrew. You see? And then we read about the story that we're going to read here about Philip. Well, Philip came over there because then Simon knew about him, so they called Philip over and he went and also got baptized. And then we read, let's read it in verse 42, and he brought him to Jesus, speaking about Peter, who was brought by his brother Andrew. And now Jesus looked at him and he said, you are Simon, the son of Jonah. You shall be called Cephas, which is translated as stone. And then we read in verse 43. And the following day, Jesus wanted to go to Galilee. So here it is. The first day he comes and gets baptized. The second day, the two disciples of John, they see Jesus Christ and they follow him. That's Peter and then Andrew before that, who called Peter. You see? And then Philip enters into the picture also. And so we read here, the following day, Jesus wanted to go to Galilee, and he found Philip and said to him, follow me. So on the third day, Philip is following Christ. On the second day, Peter and Andrew are following Christ. On the first day before that, Jesus Christ himself was baptized. So now this is third day, you know, from the time he was baptized. And John makes it very plain. You know, first day, second day, third day. And so they go to Galilee, and in the process they meet Nathanael, as they go to Galilee, that's what's happening on the third day. They go to Galilee, and the Mithnatanel there, and he gets baptized also, and he believes that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. So far we read about 3 days from the time of the baptism of Christ, and at that point we read earlier in the book of Luke that he was about 30, you see, when he began his work. Well, he could not have begun his work unless he was baptized first. So, 3 days after he was baptized, this is where we find ourselves in chapter 2 and verse 1. On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee. You see, now on the third day, you see, from the time that he was baptized, he went back to Galilee. Because we're reading here in verse 43, the following day, Jesus wanted to go to Galilee. Now, why does he want to go to Galilee? You see, there were two reasons. First, he began his ministry there. And second, there was a reason for him to be there. And in chapter 2 and verse 1, we read what was that reason. On the third day, now mind you, before that it says the next day and then the following day, you see. But in this case, we read something different. On the third day. Not the next day, not the following day, but on the third day. Now what does it mean on the third day? Now, well, if you don't know Hebrew, you don't know the culture, and it'll go over your head. You won't understand it. Well, what are the names of the days in Hebrew? You see? In contrast to the names of the days that we find in our world. You know, we call it Monday, and that is Sunday, and it's the first day, you see? Right after the Sabbath. And then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and so forth. In Hebrew, you don't have names. There's only one day that has a name, that's the Sabbath, Shabbat. You see? But every day has a number. First day, second day, third day, fourth day, fifth day, sixth day. You see? And that's from the Garden of Eden. And on the seventh day, God sanctified that day, made it holy, and called it Sabbath, Shabbat. And that means a day when you stop work. That's what Shabbat means, to stop. And then when you stop, obviously you rest. You see? You don't work. And so when you read here on the third day, you see, third day would be, you know, Sunday is the first day, Monday is the second day, Tuesday is the third day. You see? So that's a specific terminology that tells you that this, well, whatever is happening here, happened on Tuesday. You see? What happened on Sunday? Jesus Christ was baptized. What happened on Sunday, on Monday? The two disciples, you see, of John that followed him, and Peter was baptized, and Andrew was baptized. And then on the day after that, he was going toward Galilee. You see? And that, in essence, was the third day. And that's what we read here, on the third day. So Tuesday, you know, he was going toward Galilee. Apparently in the morning, and he was taking off, you know, from where he was in the Jordan, and he went toward Galilee. And he walked probably all day until he got to that place. And so we read here on the third day, probably when he got there in the evening, that's when it happened. On the third day, from the time that he was baptized, you see, we read, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Now, some people say, well, okay, probably just a wedding that people was invited, you know, there, and Jesus and his mother were there too. Well, when you understand what's really happening behind it, and then especially the way it happened, you realize, no, that must be something more intimate than just, you know, a wedding or friends, whatever. This was one of the sisters of Jesus Christ. Why? How do we know that? Well, Mary was in charge also, you see? And that's why when the servers needed more wine, they went to Mary. You know, if she was just a guest, they wouldn't go to her. But she's the mother of the bride, you see? So now it's natural that, you know, when they ran out of wine, they go to her. And so we read now, both Jesus and his disciples were invited to the wedding. By now he has Peter and Andrew and Philip and Nathanael. These are the first few disciples he had. So obviously when he shows up with them, you know, all of them are invited to the wedding. That's the wedding of his sister. And when they ran out of wine, the mother of Jesus said to him, they have no wine. You see? Why? Because, you know, the people came to her and they told her, there is no wine. And so Jesus said to her, woman, what does your concern have to do with me? My hour has not come yet. Well, his mother said to the servants, whatever he says to you, do it. You see the personal, intimate involvement there of Mary and of Jesus in this wedding. Had they been just guests, they wouldn't be involved. But the fact that they were really more than just guests, in other words, she was the mother of the bride, he was the brother of the bride, and obviously it would be natural for people to come to them for these needs. If they were not, they'll just take care of that by going to the parents of the bride and the bridegroom. You know, they were just other people, and they were just invited there. Well, this is a side point here, but we're dealing with the timing. That was the third day, you see, Tuesday, and that was 3 days after he was baptized. And at that time, he was 30 years old. And so, this is what we read here, and so we read about the miracle of the wine. And then we jump to verse 11, after he performed, you know, the miracle of the wine, and that was the beginning of his ministry, when you think about it. That's the beginning of the miracle ministry. He was baptized, you see, and then he had the disciples follow him, and he comes here to the wedding, and this, we read in verse 11, this beginning of signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee, and manifested his glory, and his disciples believed in him. So up to now they follow him, but now they have a proof that he is a man that can do such things. He's not an ordinary man. So their faith in him is even greater at this point. And that's in essence the beginning of the time when they really become his disciples. You see, not only in word but in deed, because now they really believe. And again, we're still during this period of time, shortly after his baptism, at the beginning of his ministry, and he's at this point beginning to be 30. And so we read, and after this, he went down to Cana and to Capernaum, he, his mother, his brothers, and his disciples. Everybody was there. Why? Because obviously there was a wedding of his sister. And weddings in those days lasted for 7 days. You see? So we're talking about here, about 7 days later, plus the 3 days, you know, from the time that he was baptized, we're talking about 10 days later. From the day, you know, the day that he was baptized. And at that time, he began to be about 30. Now, what is it that we read right after that? Well, he and his brothers and his mother, and no mention of father, and obviously, by this time, there is no father. Joseph died. And so he said, they all go back to Capernaum, and they did not stay there many days. In other words, it was a short period of time, maybe a week, you see, maybe 10 days, maybe less, maybe a few days. But what happens right after that? Verse 13. Now the Passover of the Jews was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. So short time after they go back to Capernaum, which is 7 days after the wedding is over, you see, which is when the wedding began, 3 days after he was baptized. So more or less, you have a period there for about 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, you see, and then the Passover comes. So, since he's baptized shortly before the Passover, 2-3 weeks before the Passover, and Passover is in April, mid-April, you see, and what is it that you see here? You see that basically since he began to be 30 years old, and he was baptized at that time, and it was shortly before the Passover, then obviously, you put all these things together, and you find out that, no, he was not born in December 25th, you see, he did not begin his ministry in December 25th. He began at the time when he was baptized, and that was springtime. That's the time when people go out and walk throughout the land, not when it's raining, and the roads are muddy, and you cannot travel. You see, they were coming from all over the place, Galilee and Judea and Jerusalem and everywhere else. So he put all those things together, and he basically came up with a clear picture that shortly before the Passover, you see, God was going to begin the process of deliverance of his people through his son. Isn't that what happened in Egypt? There was a preparation, final preparations before the Passover, and finally the preparation of the lamb. You see, 4 days before the Passover, on the 10th to the 14th, you see, and on the 14th it was killed. And so we find here basically more or less like that. About 2 weeks, maybe the beginning of the month, Nisan, that's when Jesus Christ is baptized, around that time. You see, springtime, April. And obviously, there are years where there are leap years, And Adar, which is a month before Nisan, that's around March, may happen twice. You see, it would happen twice, actually. There's Adar Aleph and Adar Bet. In other words, March, it's just like saying 2 months of March every leap year, which, you know, would bring it even closer to springtime, you see, not just the beginning of it. When you have an extra month, well, it comes later. And that's when we look at the holidays, the calendar of the holidays of Israel, you find out that sometimes, you know, the difference between holidays in different years could be about 2-3 weeks, you see, depending on leap year. And in either case, what we see here, from all this evidence recorded in the Bible, no speculations, you see, that basically Christ was born shortly before the Passover time. Just like the Lamb of God that needed to be killed was born before the Passover time, and then 3 years later, he died at Passover time. And I think, you know, this is very clear when you study that and put it all together. And of course, a lot of people have their own different ideas, and those who believe in Christmas will continue to believe in that, and those who believe in other occasions will believe in that. You know, what we believe in neither here nor there. What is it that we find in the Bible is what really counts. And so that's basically what I wanted to bring to this point. And we're going now to continue with the law of Moses that Jesus Christ gave to him, and the warning that he's given to his own people. So we are not back in the wilderness. And we're going to continue with verse 5, where we read here, where Moses is telling them, after the Lord your God shall you walk, and him shall you fear, and his commandments shall you keep, and unto his voice shall you hearken, and him shall you serve, and unto him shall you cleave. That's your husband, he tells them. That's your God. That's your maker. And you see, God was the Father, the one that became known as the Father. He's the one that is giving the people of Israel to Jesus Christ. As later on, Jesus Christ would say, I am the children that the God has given me. Well, the first time he gave it to him, and I gave the children to him, was Mount Sinai. That's the wedding, the first wedding. And he was their husband. And they were to serve him, cleave to him. Well, that's by nature, that's what you do. When you marry, well, the bride is supposed to look to her husband, no more to other men. That's what he's telling them here. And so, Jesus Christ was given a bride by the Father in Mount Sinai, and that was his wife. And he gave it to him, and through the law that he gave her, the washing of the word, he was going to remove every spot and every blemish from her. You see? And obviously, the story tells us, as time went by, that his bride got messy. A lot of spots, a lot of blemishes in her clothes. And so, God is saying again, I'm going to give you Israel as a bride. Again. But this time, she's going to be without spots, without blemishes. And that's what you read in Jeremiah, and that's what the story that you read in Hebrews of the second marriage. Well, now God says, okay, I'm going to take you back to me. That is, the Father is going to give the bride again to Jesus Christ. And he said, I'll make a new covenant this time, a new marriage covenant. He already made one before in Sinai, but the soul got soiled, you see, and for that reason had to come and die for her in order to bring her back to himself. And that's what Jeremiah tells us. Behold, the day comes, you know, when I shall make a new covenant. You know, it is a new marriage covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah, the same bride, the same people. Only now they're going to become spiritual Israel, not just physical Israel, because they're going to receive the Holy Spirit. And the law is going to be written in their hearts and in their minds. And that's what Paul is explaining as he speaks to the Hebrews about it and to all those who care to listen. And obviously the majority of the world didn't care less about, you know, they couldn't care less about these statements, these teachings. And they come up with their own idea. And they say, oh no, Christ is going to marry somebody else. You know, we are it. We are the church. A Gentile church made of all the nations of the earth. Nowhere in the Bible do you find any of this kind of teachings. You see? So you find a church, you know, all mixed up. They got Christmas, you know, they got Jesus Christ born in Christmas, December 25th, which was the day that the pagans were celebrating Saturnalia, the day of Saturn, you know, and that was a pagan celebration. And so now that they became so-called quote-unquote Christians, all said, let's christen this day and make it Christ, and let's claim that Christ was born on that day. You see, because that was the most popular pagan holiday at the time. And so that made it very convenient. And for the people that wanted to draw an awful lot of people into their organization, you know, which they now they begin to call Christianity, you see, their own church, their own Gentile church, well, they couldn't care less. And whether, you know, whether we're celebrating this pagan or not, you know, let's make it Christian. This way we're going to get a lot of people that are going to continue as they are. And that's not the path of God. No, when you come before God, God says, you forsake your ways. Forget all about your pagan ideas and everything that you've ever learned in the past. You come and serve me without spot, without blemish. That's what he told Israel, and that's what he's going to do with Israel when he comes again. And this is what Moses is telling them. That's your husband. He's the only one. The only one he should serve. Only his commandments you should obey. Not your own doctrines, your own teachings, your own catechism, your own pagan ideas, or whatever it may be. You see, whatever you brought from your culture. His commandments. What are the commandments of God? Well, you read the law of Moses and you find them out. Nowhere else would you find those things. So he says, his commandments you shall keep, and his voice you shall hearken. Where are you going to listen to the voice of God? You see, where did he speak to men? Mount Sinai. It's recorded in the law of Moses. You see? And him shall you serve. How do you serve him? How do you know how to serve him? Well, he told Moses how he wants to be served. You go to the book of Moses. Again, to the law of Moses. And unto him shall you cleave. Well, how do you cleave to God? You see? Only God can teach you how to do it. And that's what he said again and again and again. If you obey my voice, my charge, my commandments, my statutes, my judgments, my precepts, testimonies, ordinances, and so forth, ye shall be a holy people unto me, a royal priesthood, a kingdom, you know, of royal priesthood. You see, that's how you cleave to God. And all that, as Moses says, that's the way to do it. But, then again, he warns them in verse 6, because he mentioned earlier about the false prophet. And that prophet, or the dreamer of dreams, shall be put to death. As we mentioned earlier, God said, if you're going to walk in your own path, I'm going to send you false prophets to test you and to prove you whether you will obey me or not. And so Moses is telling them, when anybody comes and tells you anything that is contrary to what God taught you through me, just like Paul said, if anybody else comes and gives you a message from an angel, or as if it is from us, or even if we speak something that is contrary to what we have told you so far, let him be accursed. Well, here Moses says, put him to death. You see? And that's where the ultimate curse that will come upon that false prophet, even in the New Testament, the death penalty for liars who deceive the people of God and have been doing it for 2,000 years through a false religion. And so Moses says, that prophet, that's what God is saying through Moses, that prophet or that dreamer of dreams shall be put to death. Why? Because he has spoken perversion against the Lord your God. That is, perversion against the law of Moses. You know, the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt and redeemed you out of the house of bondage to draw you aside out of the way which the Lord your God commanded you to walk in. So shall he put away the evil from the midst of you. Now, the pagans who were coming into the so-called the church at the time, the body of Christ, you see, they brought their own doctrines with them, their own priests with them, and the leaders said, well, that's one way to get an awful lot of people into the church. Well, let's admit them with all their garbage with them. You see, all the pagan ideas, we'll just call it Christian. Christen it. You got Saturnalia, we'll call it Christmas. You see? You got Ishtar, serving the goddess Ishtar, we'll call it Easter instead of Passover. You got Sunday, the day of the sun, where the majority of the Roman Empire was worshipping, while Saturday was called an unlucky day in the Roman Empire. They didn't like that day. So I said, okay, we're going to keep Sunday from now on, and so forth. You see? And yet, they have the audacity to claim that they are the true church of God. They're full of spots and blemishes, and they claim to be his people. And so many of them, as Jesus Christ said, many in that day shall come and say, hey, we are your people too, we are Christians. we've done all those things in your name. And he'll tell them, I don't even know you because you are lawless. You have no law. You rejected the law of Moses, my servant, of which I told you, don't think that I came to do away with that Torah or prophets, you know, the magnification of it. I didn't come to do away with it. And yet that's the very thing that this church is basing her whole theology on. That law is gone. Moses is gone. The God of the Old Testament is gone. We've got a new God. We've got a new religion. We're a new church. We're a replacement of that old one. You see? And so we've got our own new holy days, or holidays, they call it. And doctrines and teachings and catechism and whatever. You see? That's the story. God says you take those kind of people that lead you astray and put them to death. Well, anyway, we're going to stop at this point. Greetings again to all of God's people. This is Mordecai Joseph. Until the next lesson.